I have gotten more from the art than I ever gave it. And I won't live long enough to give back to what I consider I have received.
Exploring the culture, the adventure, and the impact of martial arts. That's what Kung Fu Podcast is all about. And I'm your host, T.W. Smith. Thank you so much for joining me. And I'm actually making this recording Christmas Day 2017 in an effort to get part two, the interview with Doug Perry, published for you just as soon as possible. If this is your first time to Kung Fu Podcast, welcome. I believe that you're going to find the information that I share here will apply to practically any martial artist of any style and give you some things to think about, irregardless of the reasons of your practice. Part one of this episode was an hour of questions about the changes of martial arts throughout the course of the time that Doug Perry had been involved in it. He began boxing in 1946, then began seeing the martial arts showing up at the military bases back in the 50s, from the soldiers who had been involved in World War II and had brought back some of their training. In part one, he also described things that he had the ability to recognize the difference between Okinawan and Japanese culture, Okinawan and Japanese martial arts, but he couldn't tell the difference between Okinawan and Japanese language because it was all one thing and they were never really taught the root differences of the two. In part two, we're going to have stories, and then we're going to have some more stories, and I mean there are going to be some good ones. We're going to pick up at the end of part one, where he is sharing his perspective on the importance of kata, or forms that you might be training in your martial arts, and the difference in what psychologists describe as self-constructs. The two self-constructs that are on the radar when you pick it up are self-expression and self-understanding. So if you missed part one, I'd suggest you go back to it. If you've already listened to it, get yourself settled in and let's get ready for part two of the interview with Doug Perry.
When people look at their kata, they are normally trying to impress somebody. And if you think about this, you go to a tournament, you got five or three judges, you're trying to impress them. If you go to a test, you're trying to impress the board or your sensei or etc. Demonstration, you're doing the same thing. Okay. In my opinion, that is self-expression. You're expressing this yourself to people.
Okay.
Then if you really kind of look at it, when you do it by yourself and no one else matters, you're doing it for self-understanding. And we always, you go back to India, early China, we're looking for enlightenment.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The minute you think you have self-understanding, you just backed your butt up.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, you just blew it. Now you're self-expressing. So you go back again to kata, you know, and you work your kata your way. Okay. Now, when I start somebody, I count. Itch, knees, on, chi, go. And that's how you learn it. And then what happens is they say, now you do it from hajime, from beginning on your own, right? And the only thing they do is speed it up.
Okay.
They do not, they, not in all cases, I'm not.
I know what you mean. Yeah, generally speaking.
But you look at things for yourself to try to develop yourself. In a life protection situation, you and I are not going to do the same thing. Mm. I'm 5 foot six, weigh 130 pounds. You're 9 foot tall, weigh about 400 pounds. You are not going to want to get right up close to me and fight.
Mm-mm.
Now, one of the things you may want to do is get your arms around me, your hands over to get me in a position. Okay. You're not going to look at kata the same way I look at the takakashide, or the meaning behind what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I developed this, the middle mm-hmm. knuckle, and this. Because mm-hmm. if I get inside, and when you raise that up, mm-hmm. here, it yeah. becomes a killing technique. It becomes a kakashide, which is a killing technique.
Okay.
Okay? You trying to get that to me are going to be down on your knees.
Right.
So you are not going to look at kata.
Yeah, he's referring to striking me under my arm with this Phoenix eye punch. That for me to get to him, I'd have to flip over or get down on the knee because of the height difference.
Right, right.
So
and the strength difference and mm-hmm. the age difference.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to me, if a fight lasts, my life protection fight lasts over 3 seconds, then I'm going to shoot you.
Okay.
Okay.
We're going to go to alternative measures.
That's it. But... like your friend in UK was saying.
Yes, Ian.
As you develop the right of hacho. Hacho okay. is the right to interpret what you're doing. Meaning, you as Tim, being as big as you are not going to interpret something the same way teeny boy over here is.
Okay.
Right? So the right of hacho is your right as a senior to interpret what you're doing.
Okay.
So, as Ian, or mm-hmm. your friend, was saying, everything that you'll ever want to know, even about life protection and how you develop that, is contained in your kata.
Mm.
Okay? That refers back to Maki Water training, and I'm a firm believer.
I'm the same way with the wood pole training. All of my martial arts students who came in and say, I really want to learn the Chinese martial arts, we would say digest it,
yep.
is the way that it was explained to us. First you bite into it, then you chew it, and then you digest it. And you have to go through the whole process. So we all have to develop naturally in our art and then let it become whoever we're going to be. And if one day we're going to teach, we have to break it back down again, you know, brick by brick sort of thing, because it does take a...
That's how you have to teach it. Mm-hmm. And you've talked about this before, but the problem that I see it is that some people never go beyond 1, 2, 3, 4 in your technique situation. You know, mm-hmm. using techniques, you might go not 1, 2, 3, 4. You might go 1, 4, 3, 9, 17, 21.
Mm-hmm.
But within your kata, that is your right of hacho. To understand how you understand, okay?
Mm-hmm.
If you're in a life protection situation, it's Tim Smith.
Yes.
It's not your sensei,
mm-hmm.
okay? It's your ass. Your,
you're good.
You're on the line.
Yeah.
Okay? So you can't go back and say, well, damn, what did sensei say?
Yeah, right, too late. Over.
That's it. Your 3 seconds is up, you're dead.
Oh. So, I got a couple of questions, but mm-hmm. Jesse Inkamp had written me this morning, actually on the way up here,
uh-huh.
and asked me if I would ask you for, when you were training in Okinawa, what's one of the most memorable stories that you recall from that time?
Gosh, you're talking about going way, way back. I'd really like to think of something that really made sense. God, I have so many stories. This is good.
Okay.
Jiro Shiroma, when I was in Okinawa, attended with Sensei Shiroma, who was one of Nakazato Sensei's senior students, and he had dojo at Fatenma. Anyway, Shiroma is a fighter, and I'm going to use that on its basic terms. He is a fighter.
Okay.
Love Kumite. And anyway, he took us up to this old dojo. And this is back when they still had the stop signs, you know, in kanji. And villages, some of them you just didn't go in. It wasn't the idea of getting hurt. You just weren't welcome if you were American serviceman, you know what I'm saying?
They gave you the, okay.
Anyway. Shiroma Sensei took us up in a little old village, and the dojo was a tin roof and a dirt floor and had about 30 Makiwara boards on the side there.
Huh.
So we went up, and this old guy, he had a judo gi top on with the sleeves cut off, and bottoms, et cetera. Of course, we did, in Okinawa, it's hot in the dojo. I mean, seriously hot. So we didn't dress accordingly.
Okay.
Remind me to tell you one about 1974 female.
Okay. But
anyway, we got up there and we worked out a little bit, and then immediately going to do kumite. Everybody wanted to fight. So it was like six of us. Yeah, Count Shiroma, there are seven of us, one Okinawan and five Marines. Anyway, Ralph Janis, who was a TIE fighter, you know, TIE boxer, mm-hmm. you know, professionally, was also a hell of a karate guy. Anyway, he's like 6'4" and weighed about 150 pounds, but his legs were about 19 feet long. He got out there and just pummeled this old guy's students, you know, and then Jim Probst and Alvis Tenen, they got out there and just tore those guys up. And Shiroma said, would you like to go up against their sensei there, you know?
Talking to you?
Yeah. And this guy was about 50 years old, 56. No, he was in his 60s.
Okay. Look,
short. Look overweight, okay. Et cetera.
Okay.
Seriously.
All right.
And I can't tell my sensei no. I said, sure. You know, I was 38 years old. Anyway, of course, we didn't have any equipment. And right. We got out there and started moving around. And you know, I'm back in those days, even at that age, I was blinding fast.
Mm-hmm.
And I slid in there and hit him right below the heart. I mean, boom. And his eye, he didn't even blink. And I'm, geez, yeah, normally. And, you know, back in the day, we hit hard. We did not try to hurt anybody.
Right,
okay,
right.
But we hit hard.
Right.
Because Shiroma expected you to be in condition to take a punch.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Anyway, we moved around. I got about 4 or 5 of those in. Then I started in to get another one, that the world ended. Jesus, that guy hit me in the chest. And I'd never been knocked off my feet.
That's okay.
In the ring. I'd never, now I'm not bragging, but I'd never been knocked off my feet. He knocked me back about 3 feet, and I was on my right knee. And I thought I had taken my last breath. And I'm telling you, Shiroma sitting over there with his arms crossed, smiling. And I'm like, Jesus, that old man hit. I thought he'd hit me with something else other than his
checking
hand.
Checking his hands.
But he had just waited and did like that. And he came over and started. I said, wait a minute. just a minute. Let me get my breath back. So he got me back up, and he was smiling, and then okay. He said, shake, and but he didn't say it, and so we shook hands. That was, you know, because that's the American way of...
Sure, yeah, sure, yeah. But it kind of took you off, surprised you when he said that.
He said, shake, and really, really nice old feller. His students weren't that good, but holy crap, I've never been hit like that in my life.
Wow.
I mean, boom. And I'm hard to hit because back in those days, you know, I had to be fast.
Right. Yeah. God,
when I was coming, he caught me coming in, and I thought somebody had deflated my boobie and my heart at the same time.
And so he's not mentioned this, but those of y'all are listening, as he's telling you this, this is coming from a man who's been shot 12 times?
I got 12. 12 battle bullet wounds, yeah.
Been shot many times, and this is the one he thought ended his life at the time.
Now, so how about a okay?
You wanted me to remind you of 1974 female.
Yes. Now, okay, I'm going to get some crap about this from somewhere.
But, but for the most part, it's okay if I air it. If not, you tell me the story.
No, it's fine. As long as the girls don't come and hurt me.
Okay.
But in fact, the lady we passed. Mm-hmm. Patsy out there, you know, she's a, I think, 4 or 5-time national AAU Kumite champion and weapons and kata champion, mm-hmm. and 2-time tough woman champion.
Okay.
In 74, when we were training in Shiroma's dojo, it was just Marines and Okinawans. We didn't wear tops, we didn't wear obi, we didn't wear, you know, jocks. Mm-hmm. Cups, nothing like that. My gi was split in the front and all the way up the back, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. And we would get there and just, I mean, boom, 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 boom. Shiroma's wife never came in there. No female ever walked in that dojo.
Okay.
About halfway through the class, this lady walked in, American, to train. Holy crap. That night, I had to go back to the barracks, the BOQ, dig out my gi top, which had turned green, my obi, which was black, but it had turned green, sew my crotch up and my rear end in my gi, put it all back together, and to go to class the next night. And all the rest of the guys had to do the same thing.
Okay.
So he showed up in there, and it's 150 degrees with a gi top on, an obi, and that female.
Okay.
And anyway, here a few years back at my camp, I had a T-shirt made that said 74 was a bad year. But that was the first time I ever saw a female in a dojo.
And this was in Okinawa?
This was in Okinawa.
Okay.
I did that.
Huh.
And now the big joke is with people that studied with me, when one of the ladies mess up, 74 was really a bad year.
That inside information kind of thing.
That was, and then the girls made a T-shirt for camp that had the black obi on it and then pink and stuff. Mm. And on the back, it had my 8 female black belts pictures, and on the front it had 74 was a wonderful year.
you know, one of the things that you and I had a chance to just start touching on a little bit, and I think that was when we were standing out there in the parking lot a month or so ago, is that at some point in time, your career path took you to a place where you met Chinese martial art practitioners who were, I believe, guarding Chiang Kai-shek.
Yeah, okay, and don't test me on the year. But as we all know, we all got R&R in Vietnam, okay. Right? Most of the people go to Hong Kong, Tokyo, wherever you could...
Have fun.
Have fun, run and play and do sorry.
Okay.
Anyway, stupid here had the opportunity through a Chinese guy I had a little letter written to contact this guy in Taipei. Mm-hmm. His name was Zhao Ping something, you know, I called him that. But he was a former bodyguard for Generalissimo Chiang Kai-shek. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I met him and we practiced or trained out in the, out on the outside of Taipei and called Peito up a mountain. And him and about 4 or 5 of these old guys still trained. Mm. And some of the training they had was going up this thing towards a pagoda. That's what I call it. I don't know what they call a shrine. Mm-hmm. Anyway, it had about it seemed to me like 19,408 steps. But they gave you a thing like you put cement on, but it had 2 handles,
mm-hmm.
and you put stones on it.
Okay.
And you walked up that thing. Now, In Vietnam, I could walk through jungles, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. You start walking up them steps with that, things like that, and I just about died. Anyway, I had a really wonderful time over there. I saw things that you wouldn't believe that the Chinese did. I went out to their main park in Taipei in the morning at 5:30 because Zhao Ping wanted me out there. He said, "You want to see something you'll never believe." It was about 5,000 Chinese out there doing Tai Chi and this, that, and the other, all different systems. Some of them dressed like English, you know, with the black hat and coat and tie and this, that, and the other. 5:30 in the morning. I saw something there that I didn't believe and still don't believe it, and I can't do it. But he took me, and we flew from down to Kaohsiung, about 500 miles away, I think. Anyway, he said, "You will not be able to talk to the old men. They will not talk to anybody outside that village." Because what happened in 49 when Mao Zedong took over, they were killing these guys, you know, seriously. They escaped to Taipei and went down there and started their own little village. And the village was near Kaohsiung. I don't remember the name of it. Anyway, we got down there, and I met the sons. And these guys were in their, I'm guessing, 50s or 60s. I got to talk to them. One of them had been studied at San Jose State. Does that sound right? Something?
Yes, sir.
That his parents or somebody had sent him. So his English was pretty good. Anyway, he said, "My father will not talk to you." And this is kind of the way he said it. He said, "However, he does send to you his honor, he does send to you his welcoming honor, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera." And the old guys, I don't know, they must have been 200 years old, but there just a few of them left, but they would have nothing to do with anybody. They didn't want no publicity, no pictures, nobody outside. Anyway, you got to talk to these guys about, you know, their fleeing and some of their thoughts about the spirituality. And he was talking strictly of Chinese martial arts. He said a lot of the spirituality has been lost to the physical accomplishments of our people. And I really had to think about that. But I think, again, he's almost looking as if this was like Okinawa, where they're where they were migrating more towards the sport side of what they were doing rather than the spiritual side of what they were doing. And that was the one thing that I really took away from that, that I could not really use my skills without spirituality.
Okay,
and that was one of the highlights of my karate life, which just, hey, I have seen these people. You know, didn't see them very well when they were on the other end of the village, but saw the sons, and that was really, but I would like to tell you, if we got time, one more story.
Sure, sure, absolutely.
Zhao Ping had me meet him outside at the park.
Okay,
and about, I don't know, looked like 15,000 Chinese out there, all doing different systems of Tai Chi and different teachers. He said, "I want you to see something." So we went over, and there was an old guy over there was teaching. He said, "This man is 106 years old." He was teaching Tai Chi.
Okay.
And Jeff, and he looked 106. Okay. He looked like he weighed about 40 pounds or something. Anyway, when he got through, he did a little demonstration. Now, he probably was close to my height, 5'5", 5'6", probably weighed 115, 20 pounds. Anyway, he's standing there talking in Chinese, but he had a Chinese guy He's just standing in a natural stance, trying to push him backwards, mm-hmm. pushing on his hands, you know, grab his hands and push. Could not move him. And he's talking over here, and he took an American and another guy, and they got back there, and they was trying to push this guy back. And he was, I don't know what that was saying, but he was talking and kind of smiling and this, that, and there, and finally went, and pushed all three of these guys back about 2 feet. Mm. I mean, just his hands were like this when they had him. Mm-hmm. And what I saw in that was the same thing as the punch. He just went, boom.
Okay.
Like that. Then he went over to a stair step. It was set up for him. You had a here, and then you came down one step, mm-hmm. and then you stepped down on the ground. He got up there and just like this, stood there for 10, 15 seconds. On the step that he was stepping in like this, mm-hmm. it had like a picture frame, except in the frame was rice paper.
Okay.
Rice paper. About something like that.
Okay.
And it was sitting just high off the ground.
Okay.
He stood up there for, I don't know, 10, 15 seconds, put his right foot, stepped down, put his right foot, he didn't step down, he put his right foot on the rice paper, and then his left foot did not go through it. He stepped off. And I told y'all, Ping, I said, ain't no way in hell you can do that unless you can levitate. He said, go over and look. I said, there's a trick somewhere. Mm-hmm. Typical American, I don't believe nothing.
Right.
I went over there. He said, feel. Under the little guy's little slippers, Chinese slippers, prints were in the rice paper. His prints, footprints. I did the dirt around under that thing. He said, move it. And the thing wasn't about like that. I just pulled it off the side. And he said, now, put your finger, you know.
Just touch it.
I put my finger right through it. Pew!
Huh.
Just like that. And the little guy had sat down over there. And he was sitting there. And the Chinese smile, it wasn't a smirk. It was a smile. And I said, there ain't no way in hell he can do that.
Mm.
I have tried to do that ever since then.
Yeah.
But so, that was the most amazing thing I had ever seen. Now, the other thing is, I don't know if I demonstrated down there, but I can stand like this, and four guys your size.
Oh, yeah, you did. Yeah.
Can't pick me up.
Yeah, that
okay.
was
okay. That's different. I try to do this.
Just go.
But that was... These things are possible. I've seen other things, but that was the most amazing thing I'd ever seen. And when I got back, you know, to Vietnam, telling guys what I did on my R&R, and they're going, you got to be kidding me. That's not why you go on R&R there, Lieutenant.
You know, it's so funny. We have you find that there are things that martial artists do for fun and joy and pleasure, just because the fact of, that's part of us.
Exactly. And you could do things. I would, in a lot of things when you were teaching, I wasn't looking at your kata. I was looking at your hand movement and your how you were doing something, how the hand moved. One of the hardest things, and I know this probably shouldn't be on there, but to teach is in Hakkasudo, it's the crane. If you ever watch the crane's hand, I mean his wing, it'll open like that. But people have a hard time. They end up doing this and this and this. But when I do this, you know, when I do that, you're looking at this thumb and this finger. But you look at the wings unfold. And you end up pull, push, and you end up with that. Now, when you do that, you're looking at things that are, that the development of the hands and the strength in the hands, the fascia.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with Maki training. The reason people can't hit a Maki board like this is because these ligaments, or whatever they are, protect the muscles and things in here,
mm-hmm.
so that you don't end up hyperextending.
Okay.
Okay. But if you think about a punch as a whip, you look at this. These are both Okinawan things, but learning to do that, mm-hmm. learning to develop this, not the knuckles, mm-hmm. this.
Yeah, right.
Years of training.
He's referring to the just below the elbow, the fascia below the elbow, but above the wrist, more or less in the forearm,
and
in there, and having this sort of mechanically you would think of it as like tendon support or fascial support,
yeah.
and things like that.
That's what you're developing.
Yeah, as you were demonstrating the hand technique, the crane technique with mm-hmm. the hand, there's a lot of mental work that goes into that physical
Absolutely.
Development. You know, you when you move, you can see that you still have the tools are still sharp and ready to go.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's what I said earlier. I regret I don't have another 50 years where I might. The only thing I've learned since 1946, you know, when I was training 2 years before that. I started training in 44 to box. But I had my first fight, which is another friendly story. In 1946, in Charlotte. Of course, back in those days, we had no headgear, no mouthpiece, no cup,
mm-hmm.
No boxing shoes. I had a pair of brown shorts on and black tennis shoes. No socks.
Mm-hmm.
And my first fight, my daddy came to. My daddy was from South Carolina, totally ignorant, smart in the ways of the world, or et cetera, but he could neither read nor write. But he had his ways of, he's born 1884,
mm-hmm.
had his ways of doing things, okay? Mm-hmm. And they didn't change. Anyway, first round, first fight I'd ever had officially. Came out, and boy, here I went. I went all over that guy, and he's all over me, and about 20 seconds into the first round, my britches fell off. I mean, came right down. And I didn't even stop. I'm naked as a jaybird. I was still swinging, and the referee was Marion Deal, who's a member of the Hall of Fame now as a referee in North Carolina boxing.
Mm-hmm.
Grabbed me, pulled me over the corner, took my little brown shorts up, put a piece of tape between the things there,
mm-hmm.
patted me on the butt, and here I went again. So me and I won the fight. Mm. My daddy said when we left to go back home in our 1938 model Ford, he said, "I'll never come to another one." And believe me, I had 147 amateur fights. He never saw another one.
Mm.
And it was... But that was another one of my little early fun stories that I remember.
I remember we were talking about, did you ever see any of your teachers, or did anybody ever have a copy of the Bubishi or some form of the Bubishi on them? Or
It was not. Or if it was, I paid no attention to it until probably after 1974.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, when you started studying it.
Yeah, when I literally decided, and I may say this wrong, but Chaputi, Nakazato Sensei wrote about that, about his teacher, Chibana, saying the beautiful hands, that your karate is the beautiful hands, and it was a very spiritual type thing that he was conveying. There was more spiritual stuff to that. One of these days I'll give you a copy of some of it.
Oh, okay.
Because it's not publication type.
Okay. Now, I'm pretty good in the Chinese martial arts history. Uh-huh. And, you know, when we talk about the Civil War, Mao Zedong and all the others, it's that But when it comes to the Okinawan forefather, so to speak, Itosu.
Yeah, Itosu, Matsumura,
Funakoshi, these guys who had come in the 20s. Chobani.
Chobana.
Chobana.
Okay. Yeah, Chobana was the one that really organized the Okinawan Federation.
Okay.
And just as an example of how things happen, Chobana Sensei, when he passed away, their federation had 5 night dons under him.
Okay.
Chobana had appointed Nakasato Sensei as the president of the federation. However, all of these night dons, within 2 years, you had 5 Shorinryu systems. Not a bad thing if you think about it. It's how karate, you know, we talk about going up the mountain, it looks like this. That damn mountain goes like this. There is no top.
Okay.
It goes in a V.
It's an inverted mountain.
Yeah.
Right, gotcha.
But then when Nakazato, even right before Nakazato passed away, my teacher, Nakazato, passed away, you had 4 or 5 guys that had reached 9th degree level and separated, you know, from Nakazato Sensei and formed their own associations, still using his principles, but the rite of Hacho, looking at it from a different set of eyes, same system per se, but changed this. And that, a lot of people take for bad. In some cases, it is bad. Mm-hmm. In some cases, it is not bad. When Tatsuo Shimabuku died, same thing. That the people that, you know, Tatsuo had trained for years and years and years and years. You know, when he died, they took that training and then made it their training. Mm. So you ended up with 4 or 5 different roots of Ishinryu.
Okay.
You know, you do not have the, in my opinion, okay, you know, I have my own association, very small, and it's going to stay very small, okay? But Nakazato Sensei, and Kyoshi Haley was with me at the time, when we talked, he said, I asked him if I could have own association in the United States. He said, sure, no problem. So when he passed away, you know, I had started my association. And when I say my association, I'm not looking for members. No, seriously, I don't. But my students now, you know, let's be realistic. I'm in my 80s. You know, I don't want to live another 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
If I could back up 50 years, I'd take it. But I don't want to live another 50 years. What they going to do when I pass away?
Mm-hmm.
You're going to see another of this. So your karate, and if it's done this, you can only go this far.
Okay.
If your karate is from the soul, is the Shime Jura-san, so to speak, goes like this.
Okay. So in that sense, that's where you were saying it's good.
Yes.
Right? Because it can spread out and you can learn Ishinryu, for example, from a variety of different perspectives. If you
Absolutely.
Were, you know,
and it normally will be the same beginning, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Mm-hmm.
You and I, and you're a Chinese stylist, I'm an Okinawan stylist, but we probably had the same basic training in the beginning. Me being dumb as I am, the only thing I want to do is fight. I mean, that was, you know, typical Marine Corps, you know, ethos.
Mm-hmm.
You know, hell, death, and destruction without beauty is immoral. Consequently, hell, death, and destruction with beauty is way to go.
Okay.
So, I mean, that was my way of thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
And when I pass away, I'm sure that, you know, my son, who has a background, you know, I started him at 18 months old.
Mm.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I started him at 6 months old, six and a half. First time I ever saw him, my wife caught me. I had Tomfa in my hand, and he was 6 and a half months old.
Mm.
And I was rubbing his shins.
Okay.
My wife, you'd have had to meet her. She was 4'11", weighed 90 pounds, and I was scared of her. So was everybody else. But she ripped me a new one. Mm. And then, when he was 18 months old, I started him on Maki training, but it was soft.
Right.
I was teaching him to punch, not the way I punch, but teach him to punch. And he has a little gi on, and he was, by that time, probably two and a half years old, and his sister was a year younger. She was just walking, I guess, a year and a half, something like that. Anyway, I'm holding his little pad for him to punch, and he turned around and dropped Shannon. Just, bam, knocked her flat. And he was only like 2 and a half, 3 years old, max. Mm. And Joy saw that. And
a whole that, new level.
Oh, it was. But anyway, that's pretty much, I guess, it, so to speak. My hope, and this is something that that I've observed over my lifetime. I have friends outside of my style, not outside of my style, but, you know, like you, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Different systems.
Mm.
And in Okinawa, their culture don't really understand how we as Americans, you know, because we look at, you know, but a lot of my friends are Marines, retired Marines. There are no ex-Marines, former Marines,
yes,
or got right. Marines not on active duty, so to speak.
Yeah, right.
And we still remain friends. Bill Hayes is Shobayashi Ru. Larry Isaac is, he studied under Odo Sensei. Heck, Danny Glover is Ishin Ru, you know, A lot of times their culture cannot accept guys like us train together all the time.
Mm.
Because in Okinawa, they don't really, they'll get together for a big festival, but they'll do it by dojo.
Mm.
Okay? Mm-hmm. There may be 10,000 of them there, but there'll be umpteen dojo there.
You know, it's funny you say that because Samantha May mentioned one time to me that because of the persecution that was happening, they were forbidden to speak their language.
Right.
But in many cases, there were cultural events in Okinawa that the Hogan language would be spoke in some of those festivals, like you just mentioned.
And it still is.
And it's still, that's right. And it's the place that many of the grandchildren, for example, today are trying to revive or understand their martial art from the language. But the only place it was even still salvageable was in some of these cultural festivals that apparently the Japanese didn't care if it was in the opera or in the dance.
Exactly. Yeah. That is, there is a revision on now that one of my friends, who is Gibo Sensei, is the head of Shobukan. He has his own system. He was one of Nakazato's students. But believe it or not, his assistant in his dojo was Shobukan. But he's also a nonadon in, I think, Goju-Ryu.
Okay.
Okay. But he's very, very into the history of, and now they've discovered that a lot of the Okinawan documents that were torn up, lost, et cetera, are up in the northern end. And they formed a thing through Ryukyu University.
Mm-hmm. That's where Samantha May went, I believe, is where she
good
went.
Good night. What's her last name?
May. Yeah, she's on Facebook. I'll make sure that you get the link a little bit later.
But there's a big movement on now that they are looking for documents for this, that, and the other, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But they're looking more towards Nago, where the people were, you know, so to speak, grabbed whatever they could and took off when the Marines landed.
Okay. So that it could be that some of it wasn't destroyed. It just traveled with the people
So there's so much of this lost, but Yagi, who's a friend of mine, mm-hmm. He has been doing this for years on his own. He's very, very smart. He sent me a couple things and translated in English and wouldn't know what I thought about them. I'm going, phew.
Mm.
But there is a group in Okinawa that's trying to do this. Also, the Ringo Kai, it's a younger bunch.
Okay. No,
there's no problem with that. I'm older than any one of the governing body.
Okay.
I hate to say that, but, I'm not ashamed of my age, you know. I mean, Dr. B.A. say I got the body of a 20-year-old, the mind of a 4-year-old. Mm. So.
Were there any regrets along the way when you were learning martial arts? Did you have things there that...
The only thing I really regret, and again, at my age, is that I did not study karate in the beginning.
Mm.
Of course, we did not have anyone, per se, to teach that.
Mm-hmm.
And the guys here in the United States, you know, they'd been over there for a year, you know, done a tour, studied, and they come back and they taught what we knew, which most of it was fighting.
Right.
You know, you learned a couple kata or something, or parts of it, et cetera, which I didn't really give a rat's rear about. All I wanted to do is get somebody in front of me so I could knock them down.
Mm-hmm,
but that's my one regret. That was a growing up period.
Mm.
During that time, I earned a brown belt in the Armed Forces Judo Association.
Mm. Huh.
But I was competing, you know, and this guy Mertens, a Marine, mm-hmm. he was a legitimate Rokudan in Kodokan Judo.
Okay.
All right. But I'd been in karate for quite a few years. I didn't get an Atanaoni. You know, Atanaoni is a foul. No, I got Shikaku. That's when they throw you out of the tournament and the building. And because a lot of times we would do a karate demonstration. I had my black obi on. And I'd go back in there and put my judo gi top on, put my brown obi on, and come back out and compete. And everybody going, wait a damn minute. But anyway, he watched me like a hawk. And back in those days, I had knuckles up to here. And when you start your ronduri, he would catch me doing this, just turning my hand in.
Mm.
And them knuckles would right in someone's carotid artery and he'd psh, or your tied toes where you put your foot out and pull a person over. Mine became a yokogeti, a sidekick. And yame, aka, shikaku. But the only thing I really regret is the fact that I did not start studying. But I, like you were saying, and I agree with you, that you have to go through certain stages before. And Nakazato Sensei said, when you're ready, you'll know it. Okay. Now, with my background, and I'm sure with your background, with your students, okay, to where they are ready, you know, in Japanese, kokoro means heart. It also means mind. It's one thing, not different. So when the heart and the mind get together, then the body gets together.
And then from our mutual friend, Paul Cody, how did you meet Robert Smith?
Hey, no one's going to believe this.
Okay.
We're in my house right now. I did not know this for a few years. Robert Smith, if you went up the old day, up this road, took a right, went down the road about 3 blocks.
Okay.
Robert Smith's house was right there.
Huh.
So I knew who Robert Smith was.
Okay.
I did not know he was my neighbor because he had moved here from, I don't remember where it was from, him and Alice. And I don't even remember where we got together the first time. But I was so agog, you know, being able to read, because he was with, the sword guy, the Marine that had for 100 years, Robert Smith helped him write his books.
Really?
What's his name? I hate that when I'm getting old. Yeah, I'm losing 2 days a week as it is. But
wasn't Don Draeger, was it?
Yes.
Don Draeger?
Yes. Lieutenant Colonel Draeger.
Or what pops up here, their intersection concerning Chinese martial arts. Now, I've never seen this, so I cannot speak to it at all. I just...
God, he goes back a thousand years. But no, he's one that wrote some of the first martial arts per se books, you know, for us, for Americans. This guy wrote 50 books.
Oh.
Robert W. Smith coordinated with him on about half of them.
Oh, wow.
Anyway, Mr. Smith was just different. He was caustic. I don't know if you ever read his book, Martial Musings.
Yeah.
And he certainly does not mind, you know.
Oh, yeah. Chafing across it. Yeah, right.
But he'll, you know, he'll call a spade in a minute.
Yeah, and he has a very strong opinion about certain things. What has been your feeling about the ranking as it is associated with martial arts? Is that something that you've always found to be useful, sometimes not? You know, what's your feeling about it?
Well, my perspective or my idea, and I never would wear my red and white obi, even when I made Night Don, Nakazato Sensei from Motori Night Don, which meant I wore red obi. I had already gone down to Shiredo and bought a black obi for myself, a Night Don. Nakazato Sensei, when he tied it on, said, "You will wear this." Meaning, he knew I'd wear a black belt instead of that red obi.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing when I made Kyoshi. We had the world, whatever you call it, down in Atlanta, the Olympics or whatever it was. We were doing a demonstration for the Okinawans and everything. Anyway, just luckily, I took my red and white obi, but I wore my black obi. And Nakazato Sensei said, Aksamio, Akashiro. So I go back to the hotel, get my red and white obi, and, you know, put it on. The only thing that the obi does, in reality, is hold your gi together. My students know what my rank is. You know, they see me out in public. I'm still sensei. That my son, who's a seventh dan, he's been in karate for 45 years. He still refers to me as Perry Sensei. Unless we're father son talk.
Right.
You know, it's dad.
Right.
And he's a full colonel. He outranks me in the Marine Corps. And if I'm around other Marines, most of the time I'll refer to him as Colonel Perry. I don't say sir, but I'm Colonel Perry. Because no matter what he has, I'm still daddy.
Right.
But I think that rank nowadays, there were some guys that I failed and ended up with rank that I should never think they, not that I deserve any rank, Nakazato Sensei was very strict about if you earned it, wear it type thing.
If you earned it, wear it.
But I still, to this day, feel uncomfortable with that red obi on. But I wear it.
You definitely, if anyone should be wearing it, I couldn't imagine anybody else. I mean, I say that sincerely because I've got just a little bit of training we got to do together. But getting to talk with you and how you carry yourself, how you treat the art, how you work and give yourself to it, and what you get back from it. It's the type of thing. I hope I'm still churning and burning 20, 30 years down the road trying to do the same sort of thing.
Well, if you think about it, and you've already achieved this, I have gotten more from the art than I ever gave it. and I won't live long enough to give back to what I consider I have received. I actually even credit karate or the martial arts in saving my life a couple times in Vietnam. And I'm not going to go into it. I don't talk about it. It's me.
Yes, sir.
That actually, the perception, okay, I don't know if you ever read the book Left the Bang.
I have heard of it. Yeah, I've heard of it.
Okay. That kind of thing.
Okay.
That something, that through your training, that something don't feel right or look right or is out of place, That thing. Okay. It's not a book you read, it's a book you study. And I've done all those things all my life, all my Marine Corps life and after. But these guys are smart to put it in writing. And I know my son recommends that book, Left the Bang.
Left the Bang.
When you get the bang, it's too damn late.
Well, what I'll do is I'll make sure there's a link to that book in these particular notes. And if you had another book or two that you would recommend to any martial artist to study.
There are books that I enjoy, but I'm one that I have an idea about things, but I want to be the one to discover what's for me. You know, what I am and do is not what you are and do. You have to be you. I have to be me. So even in my karate may be different from someone of equal time in karate. But it's still the same karate, but it's different. You know, we was talking about the techniques. You are not going to do it. You'd be stupid to get in a fighting stance with me because all your power would be way down here and you couldn't get it back up. Okay?
Oh, yeah.
The same thing when you, you talk about Nihonshi when you do this. Okay? You do this movement here. People say, yeah, that's this here right in the carotid artery. How tall are you?
6 foot.
Okay. I'm 5'6". My chances of getting up there without some of them bullets getting to me are small. So I look at that as strike is here, okay, on the arm. Boom. The opposite here. And then this becomes the break into the arm. And anytime you see this, I have a piece of you in that hand. This is not drawing back to do this. That's kata.
Yeah, that, I had that experience with you in, when we were and Alex is placed there.
Now, there is one other thing that you do and with the closing of the hand. If I'm not intending to really hurt you, okay, when I punch, my hand is open. But when it lands, feel anything different? I did not injure you. But your attention was no longer on hitting me. Your attention was what happened right here.
Yeah, whatever that was right there that you
so
did.
So through your training in kata, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, these things become apparent that are not apparent as most people see them. Okay. And they all change. If you take this, you know, I don't want to test you because I'm certainly not physically as strong as you are. Close your hand. Now, just go ahead and twist my, like you, there you go. Go ahead. Twist it. Twist it.
It's not going anywhere.
It's not. And look at my hand. It's
Nice and relaxed.
Okay, here again, you. And the Chinese do this because the Chinese have such movements out here that this be. Comes this. You know, when you look at this, you're not looking at blocking. Okay? This, when you even in, when you do this in Seunchen, okay?
Yeah.
So you see the
That's
what you see. You're strengthening all these things. The Chinese, you see mostly this. You have your you have your tigers, they call the tiger. Mm-hmm. This pulled down, this pushed up. But then the hands totally relax, but you see no movement.
Mm.
So you don't see.
Mm-hmm.
You see.
The inside. You know, the idea when you were talking about kata earlier, too, is that the, you know, it, just going through the motions is one thing. Having some sense of intent, you know, that's where the spirit.
Perception.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so when, exactly. when we're talking about the spirit of the activity, it's not that you're trying to necessarily emulate or pretend like you're a tiger. It's that the spirit, for example, in turning, and as you just demonstrated here with the pulling of the tendons and the expression of what it would be like, that's
exactly
more of what
we're. And that's why kata becomes so important, not for kata's sake, but the study of kata is the basis for everything that you do. Mm. Everything that you do.
Mm.
And there is no substitute for training in kata. To me, the two most important things of my training are kata and makiwara training.
Mm.
Now, I can't go out here and do sport jiu kumite.
Mm. Mm.
I can't do that. That's to me, that's hand-eye coordination, and I do kumite with my students,
mm-hmm.
but they know I'm not going to hit them, okay? Mm-hmm. So I can't close. I cannot use, in sport karate, the light protection art.
Mm.
Same thing. If you put your hand up and we're doing, you know, kumite,
mm-hmm.
you know, I still don't do this. You put your hand up in a fight, screw that. I'm going right through it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care. I'm not going to do this and give you a chance of parrying. I'm going to go right through that arm because I ain't going to feel nothing.
Right. You know? Yeah, right.
You're going to feel what happened. Your arm dies, you're going to know it.
Yeah.
And the Okinawans, Tomoyose Sensei, 72 years old, stand on his toes.
Mm.
Just stand up on his toes. Me and him was doing it. We're doing the U.S. tour for the Okinawans,
mm-hmm.
and he was 72 years old then, and I was in my early 60s probably. But we kind of became good buddies. He worked for the Marine Corps, so he wanted to practice English. I wanted to practice Japanese, so
mm-hmm.
we hung out together. And he was the second in line in Wechiru at that time. We'd go out there in the morning, he'd stand on his tiptoe, just his toe.
Mm.
And he's the one that confirmed when I was talking to the old man, or the Kanye, Wechi,
mm-hmm.
about fighting, you know, because I used to go down and fight his students. And he would, that was one of those where I'd go to any dojo I wanted to go.
Mm-hmm.
And he liked the way I fight. He said, "You fight the way fighting is. Quick, brutal, and over."
Mm.
And he said, "I know that you were, but I could see where you were going."
It's
kind of the translation it was. And that made me feel really good. But then, 20, 30 years later, I have a confirmation from Tomoyose. He said, "Oh, life protection.
Mm.
Quick, brutal, and over."
Mm.
Almost the same words that he said.
Hmm.
And that has always stuck with me.
Hmm.
That this is a thing, like in the beginning we talk about it, in kata, 1, 2, 3, 4. So in jiu kumite can be your karate, but it almost has to be sport.
Hmm.
You cannot use the things that you're supposed to get for life protection. You have to separate that.
Yes.
A tournament fighter does not want to fight a karate artist that protects
for life protection.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because this guy's looking at, he wants to end that fight right now. Boom. With mm-hmm. one punch. The other guy wants to win by points.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Give you that. Well, thank you so much. No, sir. I say no, sir, but But they'll come back around. We'll
you
have a
will
chat.
Always be welcome
well,
here.
Thank you, sir.
And not to worry.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed the interview with Hanshi Doug Perry. We got to hear the story about the first time he saw a female training in one of the Okinawan dojos, his detail assignment to a bodyguard of Chiang Kai-shek, one of the most amazing things that he has ever seen, and then he also discussed how hand techniques and hand forms were not just about the form, but the intent. For example, the push and the pull that you had in your expression of movement. I really enjoyed his inverted mountain metaphor, where a system is the same if you're still basing it on the principles, but how you look at it can change. And no one perspective is locked in to being exactly the, quote, right one. It's a matter of whether or not it's right for you. And the one thing that you'll always hear Hanshi Doug Perry emphasize is that it is about you learning about you through your martial arts, learning how to express your martial arts, but also how to understand your martial arts and what they mean to you. And you're going to find all that in your conditioning, your kata, your work, your application. I really do hope that you found this interview with Hanshi Doug Perry informative, educational, and something that you might use in the future. And if you did in any shape, form, or fashion, I would greatly appreciate it if you'd go over to your iTunes stores in your country and give me a review or contact me on Twitter at Kung Fu Podcast or our Facebook page. Don't forget that the Simple Meditational Program will start on January 1st, 11 straight days. I'll post a new video taking folks through a simple meditation to help them start or rekindle their meditational practice. If you would like to meet Hanshi Doug Perry, he is very active in the Shirite Bujitsukai Association, which you can get to by going to kungfupodcast.com/Shirite. And I know for a fact he'll be at the Shirite International Conference coming up in April. If you find the information here at Kung Fu Podcast valuable to you, go to kungfupodcast.com/support. And I've got a list of things there that you could do to help me produce this program. Have a great practice. And I look forward to talking with you again soon.
In Japanese, kokoro means heart. It also means mind. It's one thing, not different. So when the heart and the mind get together, then the body gets together.